We're going to get into the third chapter now. I think so. But throughout this maturely, but throughout this inquiry, we must be careful never to adopt prematurely a moral and evaluating attitude. The human mind is generally far more eager to praise and dispraise than to describe and define. It wants to make every distinction a distinction of value, hence those fatal critics who can never point out the differing quality of two poets without putting them in an order of preference as if they were candidates for a prize. We must do nothing of the sort about the pleasures. The reality is too complicated. We are already warned of this by the fact that need pleasures is the state in which appreciative pleasures end up when they go bad. So which then would be the first? This is one of those statements that applies outside this particular subject very well. And this is true. This example from poetry is very important for you to remember that if you go on in school and you're ever going to study literature or study anything, hold off the moral evaluation or the aesthetic evaluation until you know how to describe and what things to look for in a work. At what points do you examine them? Make the description, the definition first, and then you're in some position to make a meaningful moral evaluation or aesthetic evaluation. Yes?
It makes me think of the constant question that you hear, which do you like better, the winter or summer community?
Yeah. And you aren't equipped to answer them. Again, it's a there, which is better, a dog or a cat? I mean, a completely different community. And any kind of answer, you would have to examine the criteria for comparison, right? At what points will you compare each community?
And they'd be different criteria.
Well, there would be an overlap, you see. The winter community would have more of one thing, the summer community would have less of that same thing. And yet the summer community would have more of something the winter community lacks. After you did your homework, defining and describing, you might decide that it was an irrelevant question and that the answer to that was, in this case, a statement more about yourself than the communities, the relative worth of the communities. But this, it's a basic principle of reason that you do the analysis and then you do the evaluation. And that's what you do all the time, right? In diagnosing diseases, someone is sick, you have certain criteria, certain things that you look for. And then you see how it works out. And then you make your evaluation of what has happened. I mean, what is the problem? But certainly not the other way around. And yet most of our lives we live the other way around, don't we? We do the moral evaluation first without any of our homework. And then usually cause such tremendous rows that we never get back to talk about the definition or description. Okay, the 20th century, as you know, in Florida Scott Maxwell has read that, understood that, and chickened out. Describe, define, that's it. Forget the moral evaluation. The implication of this is that there is a proper moral evaluation at the end of it. But not until after you've done some thinking about it. Remember that Florida Scott Maxwell was talking about the failure of nerve in the 20th century, that no one really wants to, the parent does not want to say if anything's right or wrong. The failure of nerve, you don't want to stick your neck out. And get hit by a fast-talking adolescent, you know. Well, you're making all this, you know, look, this, you know, this mistake and that mistake. And they capitulate to kind of a relativism that is, as Lewis would say, is a you know, one of the worst diseases that man can have, the intelligence man can have. He's in Abolition of Man, he's talking about that's what happens. No, you don't have that. You do the definition, description, and then a moral evaluation makes sense. Without the defining description, it doesn't make any sense. Just like in moral, for using that analogy again, Nancy, you know, you look at the eyes, ears, nose, throat, take the blood pressure, find out it's rotten, there's inflamed throat, white spots all over the throat, and the ears are going crazy, and then you leave. And you don't even say it's a sick person. You just say, ah, there's some junk coming out of their eyes, they've got this funny-looking throat. Not even funny-looking throat. You wouldn't say funny-looking throat. The throat looks this way in this particular instance. You know, this is the person's expression, something that is valid, and he has a right to that inflamed throat. And then you leave. And then the person dies.
What are you comparing this to?
You do the examination, the analysis, and then the evaluation. This quote on page 24 says, do the describing, the defining first. We are much too quick to make moral evaluation first. We want to make a value judgment right away. And he says we should do that defining and describing first. But the moral evaluation must come. It's the only reason to describe and define. If you're not going to make the evaluation of the relative health or disease of the body or the behavior or the opinion, there's no point to anything. The whole action of the doctor's examination would be just as far as.
And did you say that's what Maxwell has changed? Is that there no longer comes to be an evaluation?
Yes. There's a failure of nerve to ever say, you know, this is what to make a moral evaluation that sticks. This is right, that is wrong. We want very much to see
the person discussion brought up the 350-pound hamburger and argues it.
Huh?
But the time that brought this up in the meeting persons about in the discussion with the 350-pound plastic hamburger, and they won't look at it and say, you know, if it's hard or not, they always got potentials. You know, they keep on the terms of what is it?
In that case, it's who made it? An artist. Okay, it's art. But if you go about describing and defining it, you say, this is a 350-pound hamburger. And you know, of course, then, is this art? No, it's a 350-pound hamburger. That's what it is. And you can't go beyond the description in that case. Yeah. Now that's a Papa burger. You know, the first guy that does a 350-pound hamburger is a genius. The second guy that does it is a fool. The first guy that put up the painting of the ping pong table that's painted like a French flag is a genius. The second guy that does it is a fool. The first time it makes a statement, the second time it's a ping pong table. It's very important to get this. And I'll just read it again for those of you who don't have the book. And a very simple thing. And evaluation process can't be valuable without that description and definition. He loves the evaluation enough to only do it right. Because his whole life is to do this evaluation means that he has a lot of homework first. Because that's what he's shooting for. That's the meaning of the description and definition. There's no meaning in the definition and description without that evaluation at the end. Husted says something like, God respects man enough to be a judge. And he loves man enough to forgive. But throughout this inquiry, we must be careful never to adopt prematurely a moral or evaluating attitude. Adopt how? Prematurely. Okay. We don't have to be careful, but we should be very careful not to adopt a moral and evaluating attitude. We've got to worry if we do it prematurely. There's an implication that there's a time. The human mind is generally far more eager to praise and dispraise than to describe and define. It wants to make every distinction a distinction of value. Hence those fatal critics who can never point out the differing quality of two poets without putting them up in an order of preference as if they were candidates for a prize. We must do nothing of the sort about the pleasures. The reality is too complicated. We are already warned of this by the fact that need pleasure is the state in which appreciative pleasures end up when they go bad by addiction. For us, at any rate, the importance of two sorts of pleasure lies in the extent to which they foreshadow characteristics in our loves, properly so called. But the reason that he's talking about the two sorts of pleasure is that they foreshadow characteristics of the loves that will follow. And then he does the neat little second level of definition. He's already talked about need pleasures and pleasures of appreciation, and now he hits the second level of definition on the, I think it's page 28. But need pleasures is when we make statements about ourselves in the past tense. Need pleasure. We make statements about ourselves in the past tense. By Jove, I needed that. By Jove, I needed that. And we say the past tense, and that's because the need pleasures die on us. You want to remember the distinctions between these different kinds of pleasures, just some of these phrases can really help. Need pleasures, I needed that. They die on us. An example that he gives is from Shakespeare, describing satisfaction of a tyrannous lust. Past reason hunted, and no sooner had past reason hated. This applies many places. Victory over someone. Victory over someone. You get obsessed with winning or beating someone, and you beat them, and then you hate it. You victory over someone. Sexual gratification. Acquiring something that makes you sacrifice others for. Acquiring something that makes you sacrifice others for. Masturbation. Past reason hunted and no sooner had past reason hated. And then on the description, the pleasures of appreciation, he says that, how do you pronounce that? I have a mental block on it. Claret? Is it? Claret? Mm-hmm. It's on the first syllable. Claret. Deserves our full attention. The wine deserves our full attention. Justifies the work that went into it. Look at the words he uses. Justifies the work that went into it. Deserves our full attention. We have a glimmering of unselfishness in the pleasures of appreciation. Don't spill it when I leave. I mean, you don't have to be there. You don't want anyone to knock that bottle of wine over after you leave. It's not just for you. It's something that, you know, justifies the work that went into it by itself without my need for it, for someone else. It's good. It's not just enjoyed, but somehow deserves to be enjoyed. The wine is not just enjoyed, but somehow deserves to be enjoyed. We blame ourselves, but more particularly others, if it's not enjoyed. Remember a alcoholic teacher of mine was over at our house once, and that's when we were really poor, and Elise made a really good lasagna meal, and he came smashed and late. And we ate the meal, and after the meal, we had our Benedictine, which is something like $11.50 a bottle, Benedictine brandy, and a super special thing. That was when we were living on $116 a month, and we poured a glass out to him, and he went, you know, and I could hardly keep from cringing. And he just drank it down. He brought his own bottle of Old Crow to drink with his lasagna, and then we gave him the Benedictine, and it just like that, dumb. And it's incredible stuff. If you've ever, it's tremendous. And it just as if it was nothing. Blame others. It's not enjoyed. It deserves to be enjoyed.